Assalamu alaikum and welcome back. Ibn Umar, may Allah be pleased with him, he volunteered to fight in the battle of Uhud, which was on the third year of Hijrah. And the Prophet did not permit him, alayhi salatu wasalam. Why? 13 years of age, he's still young. And in the battle of the trench, again, he came and proposed and volunteered. And the Prophet, alayhi salam's way of inspecting his army, inspecting his companions, not that he lives far away in his ivory tower. The Prophet knows exactly who's fighting, because it is important to have capable men fighting next to each other. You don't want to have a child and then the enemy would penetrate the line of the Muslims through that child. He has to be capable. So he inspected him when he was 15 years of age, and the Prophet ﷺ admitted him. And that is why the minimal age should be 15. Plus that a person is capable. In one of the expeditions, one of the companions, or two of the companions who were youngsters, they were inspected by the Prophet ﷺ. One of them was 15 years of age, so the Prophet admitted him. The other one was 14 years of age, and the Prophet said, no, you're too young, go back. And the boy started crying, 14 years of age. And he said, this is not fair. If I wrestle with this 15 year old, I can beat him. I'm stronger than him. So the Prophet ﷺ allowed them to wrestle. And when he beat him, the Prophet ﷺ admitted him to war. But the general age is 15, because the age of puberty of a boy is recognized by one of three. Either by reaching the age of puberty, which is 15, or by growing the hair over the pubic area, or by ejaculation. If one of the three takes place, then he has reached the age of puberty. So he can be of the age of 11 and held accountable. And he could be 14 and he's not held accountable by Allah Azza wa Jal. Now, this shows us that there is an age limit and that the ruler or the leader has to take care of his soldiers. Not admit anyone, give any child a gun and send them off. No, he has to be qualified, he has to be strong enough, because this is an issue of life and death. Also, Hadith 416 is by Abdullah ibn Umar, may Allah be pleased with him, that the Prophet gave, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, two shares for the horse and one share for the fighter from war booty. We gone through that and we explained it, so we would not go through it again. And Hadith number 417, also by Abdullah ibn Umar, that the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam used to give extra to some of the warriors in the expeditions other than what was given to the army as a whole. Also, we explained this last program by saying that there is an army and there's an expedition that goes up front. So while they're attacking countries and while they are advancing, this expedition that goes up front, the Prophet used to give them, alayhi salatu wasalam, a quarter of whatever they capture. And the rest goes to the whole army, divided. But when they're going back home, when they are coming back, the expedition that is at the back gets the most of the attack, because the army is way in front. When it's the opposite way around, if you're in front and the army is behind you, you don't have much to fear, because reinforcement will be soon coming. But if it's the opposite, if the army is in front of you, not the back, the threat of you being attacked is more. So the Prophet gave them more, which is 1/3 of whatever they capture. 418, and who will read this for us?
Yes. It is narrated on the authority of Abu Musa Ash'ari, he who takes up arms against us is not of us.
Very good. Now this hadith is very important. Unfortunately, the terrorists would not listen to this hadith, though the Prophet is ordering them, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. It is forbidden for a Muslim to take up arms against the Muslims. And unfortunately, We see this happening a lot. And people think that it is okay to overthrow governments, to make uprisings, to kill the army or the soldiers of the police in a Muslim country. And these are part of the Khawarij, those who went against Ali ibn Abi Talib. And they thought that they are the people of the Quran and they are great worshippers. And the Prophet told us, alayhi salatu wasalam, they are the worst of people under the skies. Whenever you see them, kill them. Why? Because they kill the people of Islam and they leave the people of kufr. All what they do is look at you from top to bottom, you're a kafir. And your wife is a kafir. And your children are a kafir. Everybody in your house is a kafir. Which means we can kill you, we can take your money. And the Prophet is, alayhi salam, warning us from such ideas and ideology. And that it takes the people straight to hell. Muslims should not fight Muslims. And that is why the Prophet says, alayhi salam, whenever two Muslims fight each other, the killer and the victim are in hell. Companion said, the killer, we know, he's in hell. What about the victim? The Prophet said he was keen to kill his friend, but he couldn't and he died and he was murdered first. So it is a very serious thing. Now, this becomes permissible if two groups of Muslims fight each other. Allah tells us, try to reconcile. If one of them is the aggressor and is not willing to reconcile, Muslims, then the Prophet says, fight the aggressor. In this case, the Prophet is giving us the green light to fight those who commit an act of aggression. Moving on to Hadith 419, and with it we conclude the chapter that deals with jihad.
It is narrated on the authority of Abu Musa al-Ash'ari Raziallahu ta'ala anhu, that once a man went to the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam and said, a man fights to display his courage. One fights for his country or people, or one fights for showing off. Which one is in the cause of Allah? Upon this, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam replied, he who fights with the sole objective that the word of Allah should become supreme is the one in the cause of Allah.
So this is a clear definition who is fighting proper jihad. It has to be with the intention that the word of Allah becomes on top of everything. He's not fighting for the booty of war or to be called a brave person or out of anger for his people or for any other reason. He's fighting to have the word of Allah supreme over everything. And we went through this hadith earlier when we talked about the intentions. And with this, we conclude with the grace of Allah Azza wa Jal, the last chapter of Umdatul Ahkam. And with it, we conclude our series. Now, before we go to the Q&A, what to do afterwards? Go home. Yes, but as a student of knowledge, you finished one short book on fiqh. What to do? You go to step number two. And what is step number two? You have to try your level best to study the book of Bulugh al-Maram. And this great book is much bigger, has more ahadith and more detail than this. And it was compiled by Al-Hafidh Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani, may Allah have mercy on his soul, the same writer of Fath al-Bari and the great books on Sunnah. So this is a higher level. You'll find these ahadith in Bulugh al-Maram, but a lot more different angles of looking to them. So I pray to Allah that He facilitates this for us. Who knows, maybe Allah would make it easy that we go through this book with you or with other students with the grace of Allah. I'm afraid that this is all the time we have. With the grace of Allah, until we meet in another workshop, I leave you fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.